Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. I'm in Peoria, Arizona. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune, holding down the fort in San Diego. Jay?
There's not much of a fort to hold down these days, Kevin. We haven't been in the fort in 2 years, but
I know, I don't ever go in the office anyway. And all the time I'm thinking of the guys in the office, right? Oh, God, I tell the guys. I'm like, no, they're all at their houses working.
Exactly.
That's how it is. My life hasn't changed. Everyone else's has. I live in my own world, Jay. My own world is.
I never knew that.
Luke Voit. Left fielder that's going to make anybody, excited. What else do you want to talk about? Where do we start?
Why don't we start with, I guess Luke Voit was the, some of the pitching news was pretty big, but why don't we start with Luke Voit and what we know about him and what we think is going to happen? And I would love it if he was left-handed, but he's not. What can we expect from Luke Voit? I guess the biggest thing is, can Luke Voit stay healthy and play a full season?
There it is. Look, I'm convinced that this guy, if he's healthy, is a great addition. A great overused word and might be a little much here. A really good addition to this lineup. But that's, that word should almost always be italicized or capitalized or bolded right. Or all of them, because it's a big word. And the guy has been one of the best power hitters. The guy can get on base. But he doesn't qualify for anything. He just has only had one full season. He's had the opportunity to have four of them. Actually, I'm sorry. He had two full seasons. We can't hold COVID season against him. As a matter of fact, he led the majors with 22 home runs that year. But health is the thing. He looks healthy. He it's March. There you go.
And the idea is if he is healthy, and maybe being the DH most of the time will help in that regard a little bit. But I mean, this seems like the kind of guy that would slot into the lineup right in the middle. I mean, obviously Tatis isn't going to be there early on, although I still don't think it's a bad idea to have Tatis hit leadoff if you've got enough behind him. And if Trent Grisham is going to be shaky Trent Grisham as opposed to really good Trent Grisham, but that's another issue. But it seems like Voit would be the guy that would sort of slot in and hit, fourth or fifth most of the time, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's certainly got to be what Manny Machado's thinking, right?
Yeah.
That depth in the lineup that they have been sorely missing. I've been talking to a lot of guys, researching. I'm starting to write a story for Sunday on the inconsistency of the offense. You could take the rosy view of this offense and go, man, it's really good. That's difficult to do after last year, right?
Right.
So one of the differences last year, you talk about the top of the order, like, man, I like Tatis there. Sure. If you can get guys at the bottom of the order on, one of the things they did in 2020 was constantly turn that lineup over. They had the DH and it was like whoever was hitting first was coming up with guys on base because he wasn't starting innings. There weren't two outs when he was coming up often. That was a huge thing. And, obviously – that'd be great to have again. So,
it's a thing. You're going to have the DH this year. And so the idea would be then it seems like it is more logical or possible or whatever word you want to have Tatis hit leadoff when he comes back because of that very reason that you have a better chance of having people get on base. But you're right. If the 8-9 hitters are, going to be having 575 on or, OPSs and on base percentages of 270, then maybe it's not worth it. So where, speaking of top of the order or the order period, where do things stand on left field right now? I mean, if the season started today, well, the season's only 2 weeks away. If the season starts today, who's in left field?
Yurickson Profar is in left field. Okay. Now, here's the deal on that. And, that's not great. That's a hole, a relative hole. Let's say that you buy into everybody else. You say Trent Grisham, for whatever reasons, and I'll be writing about that soon. That was a down year. You buy into that. You say, well, Will Myers is what he is. We know we're going to get a good half of the season in chunks.
Right.
The hole is left field. And I would say, absolutely. Every team except the Dodgers has holes in their lineup. There are six playoff spots in the National League. I don't think it's the end of the world for this team. And when you talk to anybody on this team, they talk about the offense and how it can be. And then without even asking, Every single one of them volunteers. And when Tatis comes back, actually, they say when Tati comes back, because that's but it's a good lineup. I can make that argument, Jay. What about you?
Well, I can make the argument that it can be a good lineup.
There you go.
I can also make the argument that it could be not a good lineup. If Trent Grisham, see Trent Grisham like we saw a lot of last year. If we see Will Myers being the bad Will Myers. If we see Ha-Seong Kim being the Ha-Seong Kim that we saw last year. If we see Eric Hosmer at first base being what we've seen from Eric Hosmer. If we don't see any offense out of the catching position. Now we're back to Machado and Cronenworth and hoping Luke Voit, as another guy. But so it's more than one hole if you look at it from the – not that I'm a glass half empty guy. You know that about me. But if you look at it from the glass half empty standpoint, I know I can't even say it with a straight face. Because I think I can hear my wife laughing.
I say your wife is listening, right?
Somewhere she's just laughing. But I do think that there are definitely holes in this in this lineup. I mean, but sure, it can be a good lineup. It could also be a shaky lineup, just like this pitching staff could make up for it. You know, there's a lot of guys on the staff. I mean, this could be a really good rotation. Or you could have issues, but I don't want to get to pitching yet. But what else is there? In terms of left field, I mean, that's even in camp? Is it Mazzara? Is he the only other option? And as one of our commenters asked here, and actually a couple of them here, what are the chances that anything gets done in terms of bringing somebody in for left field?
Well, I think if we're going to rate chances, it's someone for depth. It's someone getting. Right. Let go somewhere else, or a trade you can make with one of the catchers, or something like that, where you can, because I don't see him moving a pitcher. People are interested in Chris Paddock and Ryan Weathers, but the Padres learned the lesson last year, not that they really needed to learn it. They just had it driven home that you cannot have too much depth for pitching. So I don't see one of them getting moved or even one of the bullpen pieces. And I do think they have more depth there. So that's it, the while they have been saying all along, hey, we might not get a left fielder, it was like, okay, roll my eyes. It now seems like, Yrieksen Profar is the idea for opening day. And Yrieksen Profar has had some real good stretches, but that's just not, we're not looking at a platoon.
It seems like Profar, this team is better if Profar is not an everyday starter. If he's a rotate around the field, I mean, one of the great things about him is he can play several positions. He's a rotate around the field, starts a couple times a week. He comes off the bench. I was going to, we don't have the double switch stuff that we've had in the past. You don't have that's great a need, I guess, for pinch hitters. But you still have need for depth. You still have need for days off. You still have need when guys get nicked up and need a couple days and that sort of thing. So this team is better if Profar can be used in that role. It's not that he could be – that anybody would think he's going to be a disaster in left field. It just makes this team, it hurts the team's depth if he has to be a starter every day. It also, who becomes that guy? Who is behind him? Who's the next guy that rotates and can play all those different positions? If Kim is in the starting lineup, if Cronenworth's in the starting lineup, if Profar's in the starting lineup, who the heck's on the bench?
The bench right now is a thing because of Tatis's injury and Profar being in the lineup. So a couple days ago, I still would have said it was almost unfathomable they wouldn't make a move for a left fielder. I don't think it's unfathomable. I think it's more likely. But could they make a move for a depth piece in the outfield? Yeah, I would even put that more at probable at this point. And I want to address one of the questions I saw there, and that's, would AJ Preller trade Austin Nola and Chris Paddock for an outfielder? I don't think so. First off, they loved Austin Nola. You remember all those players they sent to the Mariners in the middle of 20? That was because of Austin Nola. They really like this guy. He hasn't been healthy. I also don't know if another team trades for Austin Nola to be their everyday catcher when there's so many questions about his health.
Well, that's
Victor
the thing.
Who is the one who has the value?
You're right. And if you trade Paddock and Nola, who are, you know, how much are you really getting back for those two guys? Those are two guys with huge question marks over their heads.
You've decided that Caratini and Alfaro are your guys, or you've decided that Camposano is ready, which that's not going to happen. I mean, this is great. This is creative to try to get the outfielder, and you've got you have depth at catcher and you have depth at pitcher. That's, you know, right. I get that. You're dealing from those positions, but you are giving up depth that you believe you need now. Is what I'm thinking.
And you mentioned Caratini, and I mean, this is kind of, it's a silly question asking about one player, but if you trade Caratini, what happens to Yu Darvish?
Well, Yu has to put on the big boy pants and pitch to someone else, because what happens if Caratini gets hurt? So absolutely valid because of the importance of Yu Darvish to your team. Now, as much as you liked Victor Caratini as your backup, you got him in that trade because you got Yu Darvish. That's, you know, absolutely valid. But at some point you go, wait a minute, someone's going to help us out at a place we need by taking Caratini at a place that, look, Jorge Alfaro is very talented, has a really good arm, can obviously hit weak pitching as he's done in spring training. And I don't mean that as a slam. I just say that let's not get carried away. And so there you go. You have depth there. Not at all surprised. Maybe I'd even be more surprised if one of these guys isn't traded by the start of the season, even though for the first, 3.5 weeks, you get to have two extra players. Those are pitchers. So I want to talk about one thing that we'll talk about a lot more as the season gets here. And if they haven't made a move to make Yrickson Profar what he should be, which is a super utility guy where he has really immense value. And I would pay him what he's making if he's a guy that's going to start 80 games for you at various positions to spell people. The problem here is, and I forget the exact number, but it's 20 or 30 guys in the major leagues who make $20 million or more. The Padres have three of them, and only one of them has lived up to that number.
Right.
Those are the poster children of some questionable moves. Ha-Sung Kim for $7 million a year. You could throw Yrickson Profar in there. What have you got from some of the pitchers that you invested in? The Padres are not going to catch the Dodgers unless they make four moves, okay, in terms of offense, okay? So they have to be thinking that right now. The problem is they've created a situation where they can't make four moves. Is one move that puts them over the competitive balance tax worth it right now? Or is going into the season and seeing what you can do without Tatis, knowing Tatis or believing Tatis is coming back, and then you've got the trade deadline. And if you have to go over the CBT then because you're right there, then that's when you do it. What I'm saying is I see the wisdom, given the mistakes that have been made in this roster construction, or the apparent mistakes, all right? Because if Eric Hosmer, you know, hits 280 again this year and the Padres win the World Series, that was not a mistake. stop it.
You're absolutely right.
The issue is where they're at now. We can grumble and talk about those contracts, but the reality is that's where the Padres are at right now, with the $200 million payroll and a couple, one hole and some other potential holes. And they're not capable of going out and getting the team to match the Dodgers. They are playing for a wild card spot. Anything can happen with the Dodgers, but I'm saying on paper going in, you cannot realistically expect that you're going to outpace the Dodgers over the course of this season.
And that was my next question, is are the Dodgers really your competition here for the regular season? And, you know, we can point to the Giants last year, and we all said, and I led the parade on this, the Dodgers were going to win the West. There was no question about it. They were better than the Padres. Well, I was right about that by a lot of games. But what I wasn't right about was the Dodgers winning the West. But it also, in the end, didn't matter, because it still comes down, you know, it's sort of, and I will always maintain the playoffs are a crapshoot. I mean, you have to, but in this case, you're really not building your team to beat the Dodgers over 162 games.
Yeah,
you're building your team to beat enough of the other teams to get into the playoffs, and then you take your shot against the Dodgers, because the odds of beating the Dodgers over 162, I know the Giants did it last year. To me, that was pretty much of a everything comes together. It still comes down to beating enough teams to get into the playoffs, and as constituted, I think we both think the Padres are good enough to do that, but Mm-hmm. It does seem a little bit, I don't want to say, I don't know what the word is, unusual is not the word, that they do have a $210 million payroll, and yet they have a lot of question marks for a team with a $210 million
payroll. But what about the Mets? Who's their DH? What I'm saying is I've done this research, and everyone but, and as you saw in my schedule story, I referred to the Dodgers as the 75 Reds, the 27 Yankees, the 84 Tigers. They on paper are historically good, and you're not going to catch them. And, you know, but that's the beauty. And gosh, that was one of the arguments against an expanded postseason. The Dodgers could get beat in the postseason. And by the way, this Padres, let's move to pitching because this is a segue here. This is what they call a segue in the biz. The Padres potentially have the pitching to beat the Dodgers, to subdue that lineup.
Potentially.
I would argue that as constructed, Dustin May not back quite yet. Clayton Kershaw, who knows what he is. I'd put the Padres rotation up against the Dodgers rotation right now.
Yeah, I mean, if the Padres rotation,
right,
if right, you know, if Darvish is healthy and back to what he is, back to being Yu Darvish, right, if Clevinger is healthy, can stay healthy and be what Mike Clevinger was, if Blake Snell is more like the Blake Snell you wrote about the other day and pitching those six or seven games at the end of the season, And not being the Blake Snell that he was on the road. Blake Snell was really good all year, save one awful start at Petco that I happened to be there for. But he was really good at home. He was terrible on the road.
Just couldn't get the innings in even at home.
And
don't forget Blake Joe Snell, Musgrove, one of the best seasons in Padres history by a starter. He has to do that again.
Well, and it's interesting because he's the one guy that I probably don't have a question mark about, but maybe should, because it's like, can he repeat that? But I think you can almost say that about anybody. But yeah, if those four guys, and then you throw in, you know, whoever it is, whether it's Martinez or Mackenzie Gore or whoever, or Paddock or Weathers, I mean, it seems like they have depth in the rotation. But as we saw last year, you could never have enough depth. And I guess the two guys I should ask you about are Gore and Clevinger, because they both pitched yesterday, I believe. And I think you saw them both.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where are they at this point? And where are both of them going to start the season? It seems like Clevinger starts the season as the number, I don't know, three starter probably, because maybe Snell's not quite ready. And Gore starts in El Paso. But could it be different?
Right. Right. A lot of smiles around the complex yesterday, both at, 12:15 for Mike Clevinger, and then the 1:05 or whatever it was for Mackenzie Gore. It was a lot of anticipation for yesterday afternoon, and both those guys came through. Now, Mike Clevinger, it was about this stuff. It was about, obviously, him feeling good, and because he was facing minor leaguers, and they had no idea what to do with him, and it was pretty impressive. Mackenzie Gore faced certainly not the Angels lineup, but there were a few major leaguers in there. And the important thing was strikes, and everything was moving and the velocity, and the kid just looks confident. And as he explained, it's preparation and being back to who he is. Oh, that's why you look confident, right? You know, this is the Mackenzie Gore they expected. Still, he's a starter. He needs the experience. It won't be too long till he's up here. I'm writing about for Saturday. The difference is, like, they've already made it further because of the lockout with some of their depth. They already had, like, they were three Tommy Johns in the spring by this time last year. And that depth was just boom, boom. And then a week into the season, Adrian Morahone. And they have more what appears to be quality depth to start this season. Paddock, Weathers, Gore. I would go Rhys Kinnear, who's pitching really well. That would be your fourth option to start. But still, that's
Morahone has to be back at some point too.
Morahone by the middle of the year. Michelle Baez, though, that's probably the bullpen middle of the year. There appears to be more depth for the inevitable, you know, guys not throwing innings. Here's the one thing about the schedule. The Padres got shafted last year, and I did go through other teams' schedules. 20 games in a row, 16 games in a row, 17 games in a row. They have that one time this year. I think it's 17. Now, they do start out with 14 in a row. But look at that schedule. There are a lot of off days after like four games or seven games or 10 games. And so that might help a little bit, because last year, combined with injuries, Blake Snell not going very long, that beat down the bullpen. And all that built on each other. So they're just little things. I'm an optimist. You're the pessimist, Jay. And I'm just looking for things.
No, I'm looking right now. I mean, there's one stretch in the middle of June. They play 18 games in 17 days.
That's it.
June 10 through 26. There's a makeup day-night doubleheader in there with
but
Colorado.
Do you remember when it was 33 and 34? And, like, then they had the a day off and went 20 more? Like, it was incredible.
No, it was last year was they really got shafted at the beginning of the season, especially where they had that. And you're right. I mean, this year they have those 14 in a row to start, and then they have a day off, a weekend against the Dodgers, another day off, six games, another day off, you know, like eight games.
There's two or three road trips with days off in the middle.
There's the second and third road trips. One of them has the six games a day off, two more. The other one has three games a day off, six more. So, yeah, there's some road trips, not so much later in the year, but earlier on where they have that. So, yeah, I mean that should help, but again, it's one of those things you can't predict. But just having the depth helps at this point. It doesn't seem like there's any reason to have Gore up at the beginning of the year. It seems to me like it would be better to keep him on a regular rotation, pitching in El Paso every 5 or 6 days, whatever.
Don't mess with this kid anymore.
Right. Just get him used to a routine. You know, they've got four, five, six, seven starters that they could go with even without him. We talked about Paddock and Weathers and Nick Martinez all for that fifth spot. So, I mean, it's great to see Mackenzie Gore pitching well. I mean, there can't be anybody out there that doesn't want to see him become the guy that the Padres have thought they've had all along, because it's sure been a rocky ride here the last couple of years. But if he could get into a routine and pitch on a regular schedule, that's got to be beneficial.
Let's go to another prospect, CJ Abrams, another guy, similar situation. What's he playing like? Has he played the equivalent of a full season in the majors yet, even in the minors? Yeah. Like, has he played 162 games? I haven't even looked because the Padres aren't really at this point thinking about him on the major league roster, like, seriously. Now, could he be? Sure. He could continue to perform. But also, again, I think he has one hit off a major leaguer, and I think it was an 88-mile-an-hour fastball. now, hey, he also took Zach Plesac deep, and it was – ruled foul. But nonetheless, I mean, this kid's amazing. And I would say that I'm even more impressed when I watch him practice, do drills with the major leaguers. He is just an amazing athlete, and I can't wait to see him. It's just that he needs experience. Now,
Kevin, he's played
really because of that roster crunch we are sort of talked about, or the opposite of a roster crunch, like who's going to be the utility guy. Sure. Right. I guess he could be up for the first few weeks. I don't know.
Are we still talking about starting guys' clock after the new CBA, or how does that?
Padres have never been into that, and I don't think that's an issue, though. You know, gosh, is it smart business to bring a guy up to get 12 plate appearances and start his clock
in 3 weeks? But yeah,
is it smart to bring CJ up to get 12 plate appearances when, heck, you could have him in July, and you know, because you traded Eric Hosmer or something and you moved Cronenworth over, and now CJ Abrams is ready to play every day. You want CJ Abrams playing every day. I have run this by. I mean, there's certain things you do long enough that you go, all right, I know the situation here. but I ran this by people, Padres personnel people, and they're of the thinking that, yeah, we're going to keep putting him in, hoping he gets major at-bats against major league pitchers in spring, mm-hmm. and more major league pitchers will start pitching here, and we'll see what he does. As of right now, that's what we're waiting for. Like,
well, you asked if he's played 162 games. He hasn't even played half that. He's played 76 games in the minors, 42 were at Double A. He has 348 plate appearances as a professional. So, I mean, it would be really unheard of for someone like that.
I'm going to predict this. When he comes up, it will be a rarity. He will have not played much more than that. He is that special.
Right.
So.
No, I mean, that would be, obviously, would be fantastic to see that happen. But it's hard to believe that at that point, with, like I said, with 348 plate appearances as a pro, that you're going to end up doing that. I'm trying to look up, as we talk, I'm trying to look up Tatis here.
Just remember this while
Tatis
you look it up.
Ended up with, even Tatis, who came up early, mm-hmm. had 276 games in the minors, 1,200 plate appearances.
That's one of the things that was pointed out to me.
Yeah.
That was pointed out to me by someone early in camp. And just remember this, go back and read it. Not making this up. And this isn't hindsight. The Padres did not anticipate Fernando Tatis Jr. having the 2019 season he did. If you remember, the talk at the time was, let's bring him up. Let's let him learn through his mistakes. They sucked. Okay. So when Eric Hosmer and Ian Kinsler and Manny Machado went and saw AJ Preller and tried to, you know, and convinced him, you know, as if they weren't already going to do it. But, you know, yeah, you know, who, I don't even remember, was it Carlo? Who was going to be the shortstop if it wasn't Fernando Tatis Jr. that year? So this is a different roster and a different player and a different.
Was it a Swahe? Was it a Swahe? Was he still? It was
someone like that. Yeah. And there you go. So this is a different situation, but fortunately for the Padres and Padres fans, it's very similar. But he can have a better spring statistically than Fernando did that year and not make this team, because this is a far better team.
Well, and I also think, I mean, don't get carried away with the spring. I mean, that you're talking about such a small sample. I mean, we're learning, you know, guys that had good 60-game COVID seasons. That didn't mean so much, or
so,
bad ones.
So
didn't mean, it's such a long season. This guy needs to have experience. One more thing. We're almost out of time. I told you we were going to talk about this. You had a note today. Bob Melvin likes the Ghost Runner, the Manfred Man, whatever you want to call it, because his teams were 14-4. I think it was when they play with it. I can't stand that rule. That's not baseball. Play the extra innings the way
you're
supposed to be played.
That's
no,
all.
Not.
You're play wrong. Extra, end this discussion.
Play extra innings. What's wrong with extra innings?
So I will say this. I'm thinking.
Don't
back
tell
to
me
a
about
couple,
the pitchers getting hurt. These guys carry 18 pitchers on every roster. You've got.
They have a limit now. They can only carry 13 after the first month. I'm thinking back to some 18 inning games I've covered. They're really fun in the moment. They exhaust teams. They exhaust pitchers. And it's not
exhausted
right.
Pitchers for 100 years. People worked around it.
And America was different then, Jay. I am telling you. And there, by the way, before we end this, because we don't need to talk about it anymore, because you're wrong. But it's not a ghost runner. If it were, then all you would need was two sacrifice flies, because we would automatically assume that the guy moved over, and you know, or you'd need a grounder to the right side. The guy went to third. If it was a ghost runner, it's an actual person. It's a runner that starts on second base.
Okay, and there's no guarantee that he scores. I mean, we saw the Dodgers and Padres play the game last year.
If you're a ghost runner, it would score all the time.
Right, that nobody scored. I still think it's a bad rule, and I'm sorry that you're wrong on this, because you're usually right, but that's the way it goes. And, you know, next week we'll find something else to talk about. Maybe there'll be another
dumb rule. I can't wait until the season starts.
Another dumb rule that gets... I know that. That's right. Another dumb rule that gets put into play. Believe me, I saw enough officiating at Viejas last weekend that could have lasted us 3 podcasts.
I saw your tweet.
We won't do that. So, anyway, there's the dreaded half-hour tone, as Jim Healy fans would appreciate. And we want to thank everyone. And Kevin, try to stay cool this weekend down there. And we'll talk to everyone next week.
Goodbye.